Hi, I'm Madonna Guy, and this is The Natural Alternative. Welcome. Today I'm honored to have David Scheel back to the program. Welcome, David.
Oh, hi, Madonna. How are you today?
Really well. So, with your counseling, you have spent quite a few years putting together a process that's really quite unique that I feel like people across the planet are screaming out for something like this at the moment. So, tell
Okay.
us a little bit about it.
Well, I've got a lot of different names for it because it's a work in progress, but it's basically an identity management system. So it divides up our life into four standard areas so that you can discover and identify roles that you play in each one of those areas of life. And so the areas that I have are, they're combination areas because they're body, mind, heart, and soul.
Beautiful.
Or social, vocational, home, and spiritual or internal. So the social, so one's socio, physical, somatic, and so you combine the body with the social thing, and it's a bit complicated. But then the vocational is with the analytical and the mental and the, you know, study, and home is your private life where all things
relationships,
start. Well, it's actually, home is like the incubator, isn't it? Everything starts there. And so, and we move from home and go out into the world. And then the other area is spiritual or reflective in the internal space. And so by looking at those areas, because Carl Jung made a similar thing in his psychological types, which he says sensation, thinking, feeling, and intuition.
Right,
but I'd already developed this system because I studied counseling. I only finished last year and I've studied it since 2020. And I'd already developed this system before that as an artist, actually. My first degree was in art. And so I developed this as an artist. So what happens is when you work out social areas, and social areas mean personas, Jung called them persona, but he kind of made it in mono, where I've made it quadraphonic, right? And Jung also says that all the best systems have a quaternity. They're divided into four sections. So his typology was in four sections. And he came up with the idea of persona, or the mask or presentation we take into the world, except he only used one thing, except really, if you look at it, there's really four main areas that we go out in life. And that's, we go out socially, we go to work, we live at home, and then we go to reflective spaces where we regenerate, which are often internal.
Before
So,
you get started, can I just sort of ask you, if someone's out of balance, because obviously people are going to be thinking, okay, how does this interact with my life? What is what happens when we are not balanced and paying attention to these four areas of our life? Do you know what I mean? So what happens when we're out of balance?
Well, we need an example of that. So an example of that would be that, anyway, just before I go, so then when you've got those four areas, you look at the roles that we play in those areas. And so in each of those areas, we have social roles. Social roles are about being a citizen. Do you know what I mean? It's entertainment, it's social groups. It's when we go out in public. Right. And
okay.
Just like vocational is when we're going to work or studying, they're vocational work institutions, right, or spaces. And then home is obvious. Home is where it's our private life and where we see our personal people, you know, family you mentioned before, but also other people. Some people come into our home. Some people we meet out socially. You know, I mean, your workmates you don't necessarily bring home. But then you'll also have a spiritual community, where even if you're an atheist, where you regenerate, and that might be through exercise or this or that, but there's so many ways in that. And one thing was that a lot of the other systems, like if you take something like cognitive behavioral therapy, they'll look at the behavior, which is the social aspect more or less, the feelings and thinking, except there's no space for spiritual, because they work out, when you are counseling with cognitive behavior therapy, you're working out where people have a misconstrual of the situation, which makes them act in a antisocial behavior based on a self-belief.
Right.
Right. And but the problem with that system, it's mainly built on Freudian analysis. And Jung said that, Carl Jung, he said that those systems have been developed by people who don't care about people's deepest spiritual aspirations.
Right.
So he pointed out that there was a lack. And so what I did was include the spiritual part. And it's not only spiritual, but it also is our values and how we regenerate. It might be meditation. There's a whole range, and everyone's got different things. And so, because in a little bit we can pull up, we can pull up the identity map and we can describe it as we go.
Yes.
But it was important to include a spiritual part because many studies show that across the counselling area, the majority of people, between 70 and 80%, they experience healing with an improvement on their spiritual self-awareness or capacity. And so, but the current systems have left out that spiritual part.
Yeah. And that feels quite deliberate planet-wise.
Well, they've evolved like that because of the medical system. And also the other thing is studies show that people in psychology, they have, I don't know if it's the same, but there's older studies that show that they're basically the least believing, the least spiritual part of all professions. They're one of the least spiritual professions because they use that analytic idea, and which might, but that's just the way that is. And so, but there's been an inflow recently. Like I noticed, I've been working on this system for many years, and I noticed in the mid-2000s, mindfulness came in.
Yes.
People like Dan Siegel worked on that, and then ACT therapy, which is attention commitment therapy.
Yes.
They started using mindfulness in it. And I started paying attention to that because I thought, oh, isn't that interesting? There's some spiritual thing. And now mindfulness has become the mainstay of self-care.
Yeah.
Across counselling, you go to uni, they do it in nearly every subject. So now that's come in as a priority, where it wasn't there before, except the problem is all the old systems are designed without that aspect, just like I explained with the CBT. And not only that, but they leave out, so they have a negative view of the unconscious. So when you use CBT, you look at the unconscious and you find all the defense mechanisms, which are repressed memories and negative things, and they accept that there are beliefs that are inappropriate causing the behavior, but they don't mention the positive side of it. And Jung was all about the positive side of the unconscious, right? Because what's going to be in the unconscious, and that's why he uses intuition, right? Because the intuition is the reader of the unconscious. And Jung says that the unconscious is a creative thing, and it's like a womb and the birthplace, and a birthplace of thoughts and forms, because the unconscious brings the intuition can read the unconscious, and you end up with ideas. Like as an artist, you use it all the time because you end up with ideas and you don't really know where they came from. Even if you plan a creative project, often what you make isn't what you planned. And then when you make it, you start learning from what you made because it came through the intuition. So you don't have a logical pathway to get that idea. And then you learn from that thing. So as I've been making this, I've been learning from it because I started from an architecture perspective with everything in its proper order as far as I could tell.
Yes.
And then by having a structure, you slowly fill in the pieces. And it's just like when they worked out the periodic table for the elements, they knew a lot of them and they had the structure, but they had all these gaps where they didn't know what elements were, but they noticed that they moved in a particular order. So if this was a radioactive element, the one this would be too. So they used similes to work out the missing content when they had they had the structure and they had much of the data, and they could work out the rest with the science of similes and working out what would be likely next to that. And so using that formula, I just because the structures that I've used, another thing Jung said, he said that the West works on philosophically on a set of precedents, just like law. So a new thing comes in, we add that on top, and right. It's like this thing that builds like that. And he says that because the West is a very extroverted society, very external, not much internal. And he says that the main problem with the West is that there's no internal experience.
Yes.
And he talks about that in The Psychology of Alchemy. And the whole first part of the book, which is the third of the book, is all dedicated to understanding why the West pushes without a view and doesn't promote any internal experience. So the spiritual also means internal, which is where the unconscious is, which is a part of ourselves. So with the idea of spirituality and the idea of a soul, which you can't prove and which the atheists often don't like, some do, but some people are just indifferent and they're too busy. But if we have a soul, where will it be? It will be in the unconscious because we're not conscious of it yet.
Yes.
We're just not conscious of it. And everything in the consciousness developed things, like, for example, they're using mindfulness and yoga now as therapy adjuncts, you know, additions. And the reason is because yoga makes unconscious things conscious. Mindful breathing, we go around during the day and we breathe at an automatic rate and we're not even aware of it. But as soon as you stop and breathe, you're now making your breathing conscious. So breathing is a semi-automated system, but by doing it in a conscious way, now you're aware of it. And when you take control of it, you stop breathing like you were all day because you realize usually, oh, I need to breathe properly. And as soon as you start breathing properly, a whole bunch of things develop in your whole nervous system. The nerve energy is allowed to flow up to the prefrontal cortex, doesn't step in the midst, get stuck in the midbrain. And also, because if you breathe out nice, long outward breath, it increases the carbon dioxide in the blood. So it makes you relax. It helps you to focus. And so that's just breathing. And so all of the yogas, whether they're, doesn't matter what system they come from, but in the Eastern systems, they're still using the same structures. Unlike the Western thing, which is a building process, they, because it's an introvert, they just keep the same systems they always have. And if you look in the ancient Eastern cultures, whether the Taoism in China or Vedic yoga systems in India, they're still using the same structures that they did 8,000 years ago, right? Because they keep, by not making the external build, the structures remain clear. So I've used those structures as an architectural way of building the structures right, so that, as Jung said, what you need a structure that you can get the empiric data of the individual client. Like, how do you capture all the things you need to know about a client? And so what I've really made, it's the Nimbi Mandala, actually, to capture the individual content of each client. Like, for example, once you start filling out roles are things that you can change. And when you realize all the roles you do and you table them, you've got a lot of roles that you do, and people aren't even aware of that necessarily. Some people are. But by outlining them, you get self-awareness, the experience of all of the different roles that you play in your life, seeing them in one place.
Yes. So with the roles, just giving us an example of what we're talking about here.
Okay, so
for example, at home. So let's say at home, for someone with a family and kids, what would examples of roles be?
Roles at home would be obviously a parent.
Yep.
Mum, dad, if you're an adult, and also husband, wife, partner, if you're in a relationship, and you might be a chef, you mean a gardener.
Yeah.
Like, it's all the things that you do. Right. And so how you work out a role is you go, I am a, right? Really simple, the cardinal identity question in counselling, I am a. So I am a dad. In my case, I make art at home, and I'm an artist, I'm a dad, I'm a gardener, I do the housework, I'm a houseworker, I'm an artist, so they're all things that I do at home. Lots of other things too, I'd have to have a look.
And roles are hard to think upon. Even like husband, you know, that's multi-tiered as well. So I'm a husband. That's one thing. But you also want to be the best friend. You also want to be, you know, a caring, loving, you know, there's you can then break it down into different things per thing, can't you? So
most roles can be broken up into a series of other roles. Except the idea here is to get the main things that we do, so that because back to the question of balance. One of my favorite theorists is called Michael Marney, and he worked on change theories, and he described the situation like getting stability. So he's a counselor, theorist, and a caretaker of counselors. So the upper, he says that when someone's going through change, the more stability you have, the better. To allow the violent, what does he call it, the violent ripples of life that go through our life. And so when things happen to us, if we're aware of all the parts of ourselves, and especially the positive and strong parts, we can develop a type of internal and self-support. Because support, often when we go see a counsellor, what we're going for is support, or a coach. It's getting support, or even a family member, an attachment figure is giving support to the child when they're coming, they're stressed, and you're giving them support. You're not solving their problem for them or saying, yes, you can do that, but you're saying, oh, you feel like that. Do you know what I mean? That's always valid. The feelings are mostly valid, people have. What they want to do or think is a different matter, but usually feelings are pretty, you know, so when people are having feelings, you give them support. And that's in all relationships.
Yeah, and everything's valid, regardless of it's conscious, subconscious, or unconscious. You know, we're not deliberately going out there in the world trying to be basket cases. You know, if we've got something going on, we have a valid reason for that that may need to be supported moving forward.
Sure, and some things are beyond our control. Like someone close to us dies in a terrible situation, and so. When you're often, and if it's someone like a partner, you have to rebuild your life. And so this type of system also helps you rebuild in a time of loss or grief. But also the other thing about balance is that people become polarized in their roles. So,
yeah.
You know, one example might be the political situation in the world at the moment, because it's supported by the internet, but people are becoming really quite polarized in their views, so much that, you know, the data sort of shows that in the US, for example, people who have different political people in their family, left or right or whatever, they used to be able to talk. Now they don't talk to each other. Yeah. And there's a lot of things in society at the moment where people are just turning their backs on each other, where once upon a time people could work through things and keep their relationships going. Yeah. And another type of polarization is by circumstance. Like a really good example is parents with little kids. You're working in your parenting. It's really hard to fit in any other roles because you're just so busy. And both people are working and you've got kids. It's basically hard to find the other roles in your life that make you feel good. And that's out of necessity. That's not anybody's fault. That's just what it's like.
What do you think the benefit is for the government creating that division? Because it feels very deliberate, the mainstream media and the government creating division in family. You know, government's coming out before Christmas saying don't spend time with anyone who isn't, you know, protecting, you know, grandma. You know, it's like there's a real deliberate, to me it feels, there's a real deliberate division going on. Does the government get anything out of keeping people divided, whether it's black, white, whether it's man, woman, whether or not it's, you know, race related, whether it's money issues, you know, it's sort of health stuff. You know, it feels like there's a massive division very deliberately, since 98% of media is owned by, you know, two corporations worldwide. So do you have a thought on that?
Sure. There's a couple of things going on there that are important. One is momentum, right? Because we can see this, you can see that increasing over time, and you can see by some of the circumstances in the world, those things have been used to create more of that. Like, for example, when when the internet started monitoring people, we were told, oh, the government isn't watching. And then we find out that it's all, everything we do online is being recorded and stored by the companies who run them, and then they can pass that to the government. Now, I'm not being overly critical on that, because if I can, I always like this idea of noble intent, where you try to assume that people are trying to act nobly. And I think some theorists say that rather than malicious, they're incompetent, or if you're polarized, you're not going to think of the whole group, because the opposite of polarization is empathy for the other side of the group,
right?
For the other. And I remember at college, we were learning that, except in the theory now, it's not empathy for the other, because if you hold a political position, which might also be not necessarily political, but any group like feminism, like that might just not account for men at all. It might just leave men and boys out of the picture because of the bias. And the whole point is that empathy is about seeing the other. And so studies on empathy have shown that over time, and especially during the period of the internet, what used to be social relations, like even things, taking your kids to the park, neighbors would talk to each other, they'd support in times of need and this, that, those traditional caring factors that used to build the institutions in our society, it's evolving in the other direction to more concepts of power and control.
Yes.
And that's in individuals, and the empathy studies are showing that's in ordinary people, not just the government.
Right.
It's more like the people who are in those positions of power are also being influenced by the same lack of empathy and lack of appreciation for the other side, which is clearly going on everywhere.
Yeah.
And
I was thinking with the feminism thing you mentioned before, I remember, you know, when the whole... when the whole hashtag Me Too thing happened, and a couple of male actors came out and said, if there's anything I've ever done, if they, you know, please forgive me, I am 100% on your side. And all of these women actors jumped on top of them and said, how dare you speak for us, and how dare you know what we've been through. So, you know, sometimes you can't jolly well win, because it wants to be polarized. You know,
but the polarization happens because of group thinking.
Right.
Both Jung and Freud were both very clear about this. Ideas that come from group thinking, right, disable the individual to act in a coherent way, right? Only through individuality can we rise above those ideas. And so what's really going on is group thinking, right? And group thinking is always a lower type of consciousness.
Is that the same thing I keep reading about, the hive mind? Is that the same sort of thing, or is that a different level of stuff?
It's always the same.
Okay.
Like Freud and Jung worked out this early, and they both agreed on this, that and so an example, Jung said, he goes, if you get the 100 smartest people in the world and put them in a room together, you end up with the consciousness of an alligator, right? Because only as an individual can we rise above and create individual thoughts. It was, I was in the middle of a conversation with someone about this. Let me read something out. What he actually said was that he said, so long as the self is unconscious, it corresponds to Freud's superego, and it is a source of perpetual moral conflict. If, however, it is withdrawn from projection and there is no longer identical with public opinion, which is group opinion, then it is truly one's own yea or nay. So what's happening is group thinking is, I think, Freud called the superego. So it's the collective thinking of society.
So the superego is the collective thinking.
It's the collective thinking. And then the id is the individual desires, right?
Right.
And generally the ego sits in the middle and regulates the two. But if you can rise higher than the ego, that's above, because one's a social selfish interest and the other's an individual selfish interest, but there's a higher level you can get to that is individual, thoughtful, and compassionate. And that can't come from group thinking, because you can see by the polarization, and I certainly don't want to draw it to any particular group, like feminism or whatever the men's version of it.
Where oh, the two I have sides, no doubt everything's driven by media and governments.
But the two sides are polarized and not appreciating the other. And if people want to have soulmate relationships, like, you know, a better way to express, you know, a soulmate relationship, you really, if you've got contempt for the other, feminine or masculine, I mean, you're not going to do very well in relationships. So the empathy studies, more power and control are coming into thing. And I believe that's coming from group thinking positions and not individual thinking positions. And so what the identity system does, it works out the extreme individual position for every individual. Because if you could we pull up the idea of the role map and we can describe it as we go. So it's getting to the individual equation, because it's not only we're one thing, but we're collective at the same time as multi-roled, multi-storied beings.
Okay, David. So here is your document.
Mm-hmm. I've just finished this yesterday. Well, I wrote it a long time ago, but I made this presentation with the creative elements.
And I recognise your little design there from when you were doing artistic designing work for people.
I've had the same logo for 20 years.
Yeah, beautiful. Okay, so heading down to the identities, here we go.
Right. We can
so
make
talk
it bigger
us through
too.
This.
Okay, so here's what we got. So the first stage of the identity system is working out what the roles are, and so this is called role map or identity mapping assessment. So this is an identity map that I've made, and so it's basically an empty table. And then you can fill in all of your different roles that you have in each. So you can see the social roles, vocational roles, home roles, and spiritual roles. So these different areas of your life, each role is, so you write your roles out and then you measure them. On the left-hand side is your current assessment of how you are in that role. And on the right-hand side, you put your ideal or fully grown person in that role. So in this assessment tool, back to where we were coming from before, so the idea of becoming an individual is that, for example, if you've got two people who are both polarized in the same way, they're in the same group, right? And they think, and they're friends, and they think the same, and they talk, when they're talking their group conversation, they feel identical. But if you work out this with two different people, all of these elements are usually entirely different from the other person, because everybody's had a different situation growing up, what's happened to them in their lives. And by bringing out this creates, like Jung says, you want to create a capturing system so that the data can come in, so you can see the experience, because empirical means experience, the experienced positions of the clients. And so we, as a counsellor, if you wanted to find out this many things about a client, you'd have to do a lot of listening, unless you ask specific questions related to this. So what this does...
Then how would you map that? You know, I know when I'm taking notes, you know, with clients,
that's right,
and
isn't it?
Got a big, long history, that mm-hmm. doesn't come anywhere near being as neat and concise as something like this.
And the other thing is, I've done counselling, I've done family counselling and cognitive behavioural therapy with mindfulness, is that you don't go home with anything. You only go home with what you can remember happened in the session. And because it's in a chilled space usually, your memories will be working better than usual because you're being nurtured. So, but except at the same time, I always, like when I did CBT, she gave me a lot of literature, so that was really good at homework. I like that. So I could... when I got the homework, I could kind of relate it to what we were doing. But you don't have a You don't have it, because the other thing that happens with this, if you do this 6 months later, all the numbers are different.
Yeah, absolutely. Just that
So it also,
the consciousness of writing a list. Yeah.
Sure, except the thing is that doubles as a really good feedback tool. If you're seeing a client and you've got this, they show you this one from 6 months ago, and then 6 months, if they've been working on these roles with you, all their numbers will have changed, and then you can see feedback over time of the whole system. And so numbers that are, like, just take the social one that we've got right here. Well, no, let's take the vocational one because everyone likes work. So what you've got here is, so in the first one, inflow fun teacher. Okay, so the person who filled these out was an experienced teacher. And so, except what you're doing is that...
So she feels like a 7, but she wants to be a 9.
Right, at present she feels like, well, that's self-assessment, which is a constructivist, you know, it's an educational idea. So, currently, no, you can honestly say you're a 7. Like, for example, to become a 5 as a teacher, you have to get your qualifications, you have to get registered. Becoming 5 is already a good thing. Because another problem with goal setting systems is, especially with a lot of numbers like this, it looks like, oh, really negative, and I'm deficit in every role. But that's not true. It's more like a career like a teacher. It's something that you grow over many, many years, like a tree growing. Do you know what I mean? You can't just become a 9 as soon as you graduate, for example. So what then when you get your numbers, what you do is you name the role according to the higher number. And that's why, so the person who filled it out, they just had teacher originally. When you fill them out, you just put what all the roles are. But after you've numbered them, you go back and you refine it to the values that you're seeking, what your idea of what a good teacher would be. And then you can more or less envision that and start working towards it. Because I've got an Albert Bandura quote. He's a Canadian psychologist. He did a lot of stuff on resilience, social learning. And he says, for example, the projected future can be brought into the present through forethought. By being represented cognitively in the present, conceived future states are converted into current motivators and regulators of behavior. So just so this role, this process actually shows that in real life for an individual person. So a teacher, so that person, when they look at that future, when they grow a bit more, like, so to get from a 7 and a 9, you might have to do some more education or some modules to work out how that works. But you can immediately visualize.
Or take some relaxation supplements in the morning.
You can do that. Yeah, sure. That's a good idea. But just looking at that forward picture of ourselves, we can immediately see it, right? And according to Jung's object relation theory, it seems that just by defining that higher thing, that will draw you towards it, like in a way. It's because
what
it becomes
we focus on, we create.
That's right. And not only do you do that, but you actually make it very specific according to the qualities and values that you want to increase to gain that higher number.
Yes.
And so so colleagues, supportive colleague, like you could write colleague as a role, but we've got supportive colleague because that's the actual thing that you want to increase to get to that number. And so it's very specific. So even if, just say you had two very similar people, even if they had similar roles, the way that they named them according to the high number might be different because they've got a different idea of what a 9 is.
Yes.
Because generally 5 is competent, 7's good, and 9's great, you know, more or less. And so, and it doesn't matter. A lot of these things are arbitrary. Like Jung said when he came up with his typology, you know, sensation, he said it doesn't, they're not set in stone. He goes, you just need some reliable categories to gather the data. Because the idea is to get the information about the individualized nature of that person. Because once you've got this, you can see it's a pretty interesting map of somebody's life. Do you know what I mean? Somebody, they feel they want to be a more playful person.
Yeah.
Or, you know, so
Can
Like
I give a personal example about how this worked for me a couple of years ago?
Sure.
So when you were developing this during college, I was having an issue with someone, and it wasn't good, and it was feeling like I was going to lose that person as a friend. And when we went through a whole bunch of my roles, one of the things that was really obvious is that I had lost my social roles because of what I was focusing on at the time. So I wasn't focusing on any of the fun stuff. I wasn't focusing on being a good friend. I wasn't focusing on being consciously connected to someone when I was with them, because I had something very specific that I was spending all my energy on.
And it
And I
kind of took
feel
over
like
your
during that
life.
time I lost even the sight or the thought of any of my other roles.
And isn't that amazing? And that happens to people all the time through all types of polarization, whether they're addictions, whether they're, I work all the time and don't have fun with anyone, or, and you become obsessed about a particular role. And what's really happening is the other ones are being neglected.
Yes.
And in all the literature, everyone goes on, oh, angry people and this and that, but neglect is, has just as bad, often worse effects than
Well,
abuse.
loneliness has the same health deficit as being a smoker.
That's
Being
why people
lonely.
die and people die of loneliness.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I read studies on that. That was really interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the other reason that it's another thing you can do this is because this keeps you on track, right? Because it's actually we get so busy that we just forget. And so, but once you've got this, and if you put that on your wall, or you could make it really nice too, make up a nice chart. It's not a complex design. Do you know what I mean? It's just rows, and
Yeah.
so it's really easy to make, and then you can put it, somewhere nice on the wall and remind yourself. And then people make to-do lists. In this, we have to-be lists, right? Because we want to be those parts of ourselves. We want to be, like in my case, I want to be an artist. Do you know what I mean? It doesn't matter what I need to do that sometimes. I need to play music sometimes. I need to listen to me. I'm a music listener. There's all these things that we want to be, but we forget. And a lot of things work like that in counseling. You go, you do it, but then you forget. And so it's like being able to remember all the parts of ourselves. It's very easy to remember to do them all, but then we can work on it. You can work on a couple, because the other thing is when you're going through change, often what your idea of what the change is doesn't end up what is going to actually change. Like you'd know that from seeing clients. They come in with this problem, but it's really that.
Yeah.
And so with this, you can work, because they're all very small things, like when we're just thinking of ourselves as one big thing, everything. But when you break it down in little parts, you can go, okay, I'll work on that one and that one and that one. They're my priority roles. I've got my role list, but these ones I'm focusing on. And then you can get support with a coach or a counselor or even someone you know. Because the other thing is, it is really good for explaining what your life goals are. Like, how could you explain? But like in couples, like my wife and I, we do this. We did a session recently. We did them, and she went on holidays and left the role. And really, it was a really major discovery thing to actually sit down and look at your partner's roles and oh, they're like that. And you can remember what their needs are too.
Yeah.
So it's a really good communication tool to explain what your needs, what your desires, what your goal, what your. Because another thing is, some of them are, some of them might be, I'm a six, and I'm happy being a six.
I was about to say that because not everyone wants to change things either. You know, like
And
you might
they're.
be as good a mum as you are hoping to be because you fit in all of your mum energy. And, it's sort of like sometimes it's okay where we are, and
It's
that's okay
okay.
too.
It's okay to be where you are, and you can't be a nine at everything.
Yeah.
And so, but a role that, even a hobby role that you're a three and you're happy being a three out,
Yeah.
what that represents is authenticity in one of our life roles. We're actually where we want to be, and that's a real strength.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Because we're congruent. The word Carl Rogers uses, congruent, the difference between where we are and our ideal self.
Yes.
And he said that in Mono too. But it doesn't have to be in mono. It can have all of these areas. And each one, you can measure the congruence in each one and then work towards. And the other thing is, it doesn't have to be a negative thing that you want to be higher, that you want to be a higher number. That doesn't have to be egotistic. And just because you're a three and you don't want to, and you want, because you look at all and you're, oh, I'm deficit in all of them. No, yeah. You're not. You're growing to the end of your life and you're in the middle of a growth story.
Yeah, that's so, right. And I was sort of so thinking, you know, one of the things that I do with some friends every year, once a year is karaoke. You know, right. I know that I'm probably 2, 3, 4 in a karaoke. I can hit notes. I don't have a great voice. But, you know, I don't give a toss if I don't ever get better at 2, 3, 4. You know, I sort of don't care.
Right.
You know, whereas some people would want to be, no, I want to be a 9 out of 10. I want to be that person who can belt out that song in a bar full of people. Yeah, that's not me. Mm-hmm. Well, actually, I do want to, but I use, you know. Anyway, it's sort of interesting, isn't it? Some things it's okay.
But that could be another thing, that if you had too many nines you want to be, that pulls you out of balance, because to be a 9 in anything, you've got to almost be like perfect at it.
Yeah, right.
So, and so how many of those things can you achieve without neglecting the others?
Yes.
So, you know, it's good to be more realistic about, you know, because and the stage you're at too, like mindful, sincere person there. It's like, you know, how do you even look at that? But it is something that you might want to increase and, but also be aware of it, self-aware of, I'm here. But it's not, it doesn't mean that you're a deficit. If you're below 5, you can call that, like, just say you're a parent and you're a 3. You know what I mean? If you're a parent, you probably should be a 5 if you can.
Yeah.
You know, conforming to the role. And just say you're an angry parent, then you might be a 3 because you can't come up to your own standards, yeah. Your own moral or ethical.
And someone might be a 3 because of a, you know, an injury or chronic fatigue or, you know, some sort of damage, you know, that of something that they've had no control over. So they might be in bed 16 hours a day, unable to focus and pay attention to their kids, and knowing that at the moment that's the best they've got, but they have to forgive themselves for that as well, you know, knowing that they
that's
want
right.
A 7 or an 8.
Mm-hmm. And when you write it like this, it's really easy to explain it to somebody.
Yeah. No, that's beautiful. I do feel like there's been a push against spirituality on the planet the last, well, 20 years or something at least. And it's almost like mainstream media loves it when people aren't connecting with other people anymore. You know, Jacinda Ardern across the pond during COVID, don't visit your neighbours, don't speak to your neighbours, don't go shopping, don't connect with people, it's dangerous. And you just go, well, come on, guys.
Telling people not to talk to each other was really strange.
Yeah, we're humans. Yeah. That was
They said don't talk to your neighbours, like even across the fence. That's what was implied. It was pretty.
And in Western Sydney, where they actually had drones over the top, people who were in their backyards actually had drones telling them to get inside. So they weren't even allowed outside. Anyway, you know, it's just crazy. Some of the rules had no common sense. It was more about control. So
looking at a psychological aspect of that, which people mightn't normally look at, Jung said that when societies become like that, more totalitarian, more authoritarian, what they want the individuals to become, he called them depotentialized units, that they didn't have the potential to have agency. And even though it's come out fairly clear that the lockdowns, like the studies, like I'm studying family therapy while going through the lockdowns, and the studies are showing the severely adverse effects on the children, right? Because of the lockdowns, there were so many support agencies that didn't help people with domestic violence and stuff that would have, so much support was removed. And so those, the people, and even if it was, you know, genuine concern and it was a mistake, because the I won't say anything about that because we're on YouTube. So the even if that was done intentionally, it had the same simulated effect of a totalitarian thing. So people became depotentialized, because a lot of these things in these role things, like if you're a traveler, for example, that's just gone. And there were a lot of things that people consistently did as roles that couldn't be used. So the people are becoming depotentialized, in Jung's word. They become, and he says that they just want them to stay at home and do nothing.
That sounds and straight Jung, out of 1984. Potentialized unit? Yeah, that's just.
Right. Well, Jung was also writing
world,
during
1984.
Well, Jung was writing during those periods when when the Nazis or the communists were collectivizing society and destroying individuality, which is what depotentializing is. So this system does the direct opposite of that, and it potentializes, because the whole point is, like, in counseling, is to help people reach their potential, which is potentialized instead of depotentialized. So you can see the psychology of the lockdowns, whether people agreed them with or not. Everyone agrees that they were harmful. And you can see that the effect was that people became depotentialized and unable to express their agency, which is an effect in society, like they usually would have. And so whether you use, yeah.
I've got someone picking up something in a second. So do you want to hold on for 2 minutes? Hold that thought. One of the things that I was thinking was that Dr. Vernon Coleman, I don't know whether you know him at all, but he's been very vocal the last couple of years, and probably for 50 years, against the whole big pharma trying to control our world, you know, in governments and all that sort of thing. So he's a very outspoken doctor. And he published a book where he was talking back in the year 2000 or 2002 in the UK. The Psychiatric Association of the UK stated that the need for individualism was the biggest risk to society.
Really?
Yes. So all of the medications, and in the last, say, 5-10 years, regularly I get teenagers in my clinic who are going through something. And they're given that triple therapy, antidepressant, anti-anxiety, antipsychotic, at the same time. These poor little brains that are, you know, doing all their teenage stuff, and they're given heavy duty medications. That just,
I know.
It's just,
they're amphetamines, some of them.
Yeah. They're addictive.
For ADHD.
Yeah.
Of course they're addictive. And then after their prescription runs out, where do they get them? You know, the problem with that is it resolving the condition?
No.
Right? Or do you have to stay on drugs for your whole life? It does. Yeah. I'm a complementary practitioner. And as a counselor, I work in between both schools of thought. And so if that was the British Psychological Society.
Yeah. Maybe psychiatric.
Oh, that's strange.
I was trying to find it before. I thought I highlighted it, but I've got about 5 of his books, so it might have been one of the other books.
But anyway, the point of that is that the cure is the same, that if people are depotentialized, the goal is to potentialize them, which is to help them experience their potential. When you break it up into roles like this, you're looking at the potential of each role. Right, because that's what their potential is. It's our growth potential, as we can see it from now. And because if you go through some healing, just immediately after that, the numbers might change. Because it's being able to, like Bandura thing before, just by picturing your potential, you start moving towards it immediately. And all the goal setting says, you know, like you said, where your mind goes, your energy flows. But also, by naming them specifically like that and numbering them, it helps your memory. It also shows how many general steps, like, because when you've got them, you can see some have just got one step in between, but others have got 7 steps. So something with 7 steps is going to take a lot more than something with 1 step.
Right. So it also shows, mum is a 7 on the left and an 8 on the right. So this chick's pretty chilled, but she'd like to be a fraction more chilled.
Just a bit. And so,
Well-wisher is a 5 on the left and an 8 on the right. So there's something, you know, that she's really got to think about consciously to make, you know, what makes me a good well-wisher of a person. It's like, you know, I leave people's houses And, you know, I might have had a couple of cups of tea or coffee. And it's not until that, you know, and I'm not one of the, and this is awful, I'm not one of those people who thinks, oh, thanks, you know, thanks for that, David. Awesome having a couple of cuppas with you. You know, I just don't think of that as a thank you, which is, you know, and other people come to my house and they leave and they're really, really grateful and thankful. And I think, doesn't everyone do this? Is that a thank you thing? Anyway, it's sort of funny, isn't it?
Well, some things are just the problem is that there's a couple of things going on there. I was having a conversation with someone about that last night about social fluff. I can't remember what she called it. And we were talking about, you know, that first thing I said about Jung, where whether it's a conscious thing or not, a lot of people are just trying to fit into society, right? And they're learning the rules of the games because if you don't fit in, you get treated so poorly. People are terrified of not fitting in with the superego. And so they just conform to what everyone else is doing. And Jung said they're also unconscious behaviors. Because they're just copying. Everybody really copies each other about status and everything. And where that hasn't actually looked at their individual needs very well. And so by conforming to the superego, just like being in a group consciousness, it's not actually really conscious behavior. Whereas if you work out these individually, each one's a very conscious decision to measure it and to name it according to its highest potential. Because the other thing about goal setting and is that you want to be very, they say, be very specific. Like for example, if in goal setting around, you know, starting a business or something, they say you should be specific about the amount of money you want to earn that year, right? Very specific, and it's really important to be specific. So this system
Positive and
should,
in the affirmative. You
and
know,
this
so.
system does that with everything because to help people reach their potential is the opposite of depotentialized. And when you mentioned teenagers before, what happens with teenagers is that what's happening now is that teenagers are spending a lot of time online. And compared to what teenagers used to do, they're actually doing a lot less roles. And the
Well,
literature
computers are
says,
very 2D. So unfortunately, because it's so focused, whether or not it's a phone, whether or not it's a device, whether or not it's a computer, it's all very 2D. There's no peripheral there. So then we're losing all of that energy in the brain that is not up and running because they're not running and jumping and climbing trees and going for a swim and going for a bushwalk and, you know, not doing all the things that people our age did as kids. They're just not doing them.
So the computers, the internet, even though I'm really positive about technology as a rule, and with kids using it too, I don't have the, you know, they call it screen. And I kind of go, no, it's a pretty nice resource. I mean, because it's a little bit like when you do drug assessment. Some of the theorists point out that everybody forgets that when they tell them that they should just give it up. And for a start, if you just give up alcohol, you might go into seizures. But they forget that it has a twofold thing happening. One, it's giving people pleasure, and the other is relieving pain. So what are you going to replace it if you take it away? And the same thing with the internet, it's giving them pleasure and it's taking away pain. The pain of being bored as a teenager, and it's giving them a dopamine hit. But the problem is it's reducing the role number. Because and so this is would be a very good program for teenagers to help them develop life roles, because the more roles, like all of the roles that you do out socially, like kids go to school, so they do have a bunch of roles going. They're spending a third of their day actually doing a good thing, and there's lots of roles going, so that's fine. The problem, this happens in the home roles, and the more roles you have, the more you integrate, you learn, because you can integrate off the mentors you have as you go, because you see how they do things, and you just learn it through social learning. Because another thing that we do, like Albert Bandura talks about social learning, where it's almost like we learn in the environment through osmosis. Because his original tests were with the Bobo doll, you know, that funny shaped doll, and they'd take little kids in who were 2 or 3, and they'd watch an adult hitting the Bobo doll, and then the kids would start hitting it. Like there's that level of social learning going on with everything. And so with our family environment, if the parents are just watching TV all the time, well, why shouldn't I? because that's how you switch off, you know, because a lot of people spend a lot of time watching whatever it is, Netflix or whatever they're into.
This little Bobo doll, is this what you're talking about? Can you see that?
That's the one. Yeah, see the little kid with the hitting the Bobo doll?
Yeah, right.
Because he just seen an adult doing it. They just watched the adults and then they just started doing it. So environments where there's dysregulated behavior by the adults, the kids are just going to learn it. They learn the attitudes and everything through social learning. You don't have to train your kids. If you're like a crappy parent who yells all the time and this and that, or you're manipulative, it doesn't matter what it is. It's pretty hard to stop the kids being like that if you're like a dishonest person or a immoral person. They're just, and that's how generational patterns, they kind of come down through that osmosis effect. And you can see it in kids where they've had trauma, that a lot of the behaviors are just, and attitudes are just copied. Really?
Yes.
Of course, absolutely. Depending on the amount of resilience you have, depends whether you're influenced by that too.
And I can imagine that this process actually builds resilience. You know, like we... I hope so. Yeah. Because just by, like, my hubby was chatting on the weekend and he was sort of thinking, because he grew up in a household, there wasn't a lot of money. The dad, you know, took off and stole everything when he was like 10. And grew up with one of his best friends, and the best friends had little motorbikes, had shotguns, had lots of dogs and birds and just lots of experience. You know, they had big trampolines. And so he was sort of saying on the weekend that he thinks all those experiences on the farm allowed him to have like an innate sense of confidence. So it doesn't matter what people are doing on in the world, he feels okay within himself. He's warm on the inside. So so you know, it's sort of, and he hadn't really thought about that. And then because we did a gun lesson on, you know, we sort of shot a shotgun because I've always wanted to do it, funnily enough. Anyway, so we did it. Got my little bruise to
I grew up
it.
There. I grew up shooting guns in the country, you know.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So it was one of those things. I've wanted to do it since I went to Vietnam when they had the there was some sort of rifle that you could pay $5 and shoot it. And because of the people on the bus who were very anti doing it, I didn't choose to do it and I felt ripped off ever since. So anyway,
I self-censored.
And I'm so annoyed at myself for self-censoring that. I've felt regretful ever since. And I think that's...
Well, Jung says people are terrified of the group and they'll self-censor and they'll not do things just because they don't want to be pointed out as different.
Did you see the interview with Neil deGrasse Tyson last week or the week before? I can't remember who it was with, some guy with three names. And
Patrick Ben David.
That was it. And you heard his comment about...
I heard it.
Well, he basically said that how dare you do anything other than try to save everyone else? How dare you be an individual? It's not quite what he said, but it's pretty much what he meant. And he was so angry and he believed that...
I saw that because it was posted all over the internet. It's quite controversial what he said.
Yeah. And, you know, that
was a public health attitude.
It
right,
was.
Okay, so, oh, isn't that interesting? I didn't think about it. I didn't pay closer to. I heard it and I kind of, right, he like
he got
opposed
really
the individual
angry
perspective.
And he was very angry on behalf of Big Pharma and on behalf of big government. And how dare you be an individual and choose to do something that does not fit what they want you to do?
Well, okay.
No, that's how I took it.
So, I did watch it, and I was interested in the exchange, and that's the same position that the media is taking, and it's probably a depotentializing course. Although it's hard to know, like during the pandemic, it's hard to know. Like most people, for example, like people I knew in the mainstream jobs, like teachers and this and that, I know from the feedback there that they just did all do that. Everyone did that. They just followed what the government said, and And the percentage of people who questioned it were a smaller amount. And I was just watching the whole thing. And because I was up on the data, I was studying at the time. So I was like all in the academic world. So I just took everything as a study. I looked at all the studies that came out and I noticed the anomalies. And yeah, I was really saddened by that.
I
And
mean, I
people with a
suppose
D.
the thing that upsets me about Neil is that he's one of the smartest guys in the world, in theory. But like you said, he's probably got an alligator brain. You know, he's sort of like there he is at this time after 2 years of or 3 years of the shenanigans and still believing that and pushing it when the data
Well,
is
it's
not showing.
once again, where we were going from before, you've got in that conversation, you had two people. He was one of them with coming from one group perspective. He was coming from the group perspective of the group who were just I would call it affirmative care with the treatment that was available without another option. And the other side was looking at the data and the studies that had come out since and wondering if that was appropriate. Whereas, like Neil deGrasse Tyson said, like from his point of view, and it could have been true, that he might have been paying attention and aware of what the health concerns were about the treatment, right? Because I
Right.
don't call it what they call it. I call it a treatment because usually if you're told you're getting an inoculation, the reason that you give it to people is so that they don't catch it.
Or spread it.
Whereas, or, well, I don't know. I think, no, I don't even know if that's the main focus. It's that you don't catch it. Because if you don't catch it, you won't spread it. So that's the normal logic of inoculations. And so when it doesn't do that primary thing, it's kind of go, well, what's it for? And so because it's not helping, because you know, what the media said about that and what was really happening were opposites. And so what you've got is you've got two group views again, right? And because they're both group views, they still have that same problem that they're a group view, not appreciate. They didn't harmonize that either in that conversation. It just ended up they changed the subject because they couldn't come to any agreement on. And that's the whole point about groups acting against each other, and no one's coming to the individual thing yet. I mean, he was trying to, but there's many people in the position on both sides on that, and when you look at the data, I mean, that guy, he's a businessman, and they look at the figures from the insurance because that's how you can tell what really
Is
happened.
that Ed Dowd? Ed Dowd, is
No,
that who you're talking about there?
it's Patrick Van David.
Oh, okay, because Ed
That
Dowd
was
is just
the
written a book as
interview.
well.
Right. But I don't I'm not, for me as a counselor, I don't get too involved in the medical side of things. I just watch what people go through psychologically. And in this idea, you've got two groups opposing each other without anybody coming to an individual situation where they can get understanding of the other side,
Yes.
which is always how you come to a balanced position in yourself. Like I try to sit in the complementary position as much as possible
Yeah, with
because
them.
I have with it because with everything because some people are different and they just won't ever see it from the other side because of their the way they grew up, how they've learnt, and this and that, and especially when you're dealing with complex science, like you know, I've studied science except and I listen to experts talking about it. And I try to put it together in a picture, but I don't know anything about biology or geomancy very much at all. So it's pretty hard for me to like. And so I sit there and I listen to what people who are qualified say. And when they have some concerns, I go, oh, they're concerned. That's a problem because they actually know what they're talking about.
And it's a whole follow the money. Who's being paid by the money makers? You know, do you live?
That's,
It's challenging.
but so and so so the difficulty I have with this type of polarized debate because it's not the only subject like with the health regulations from the last 3 years, it's not the only subject that's polarized in the world. So I see it as a general problem that people aren't understanding the other. And when you've got groups of people not understanding the other and they start hitting fanatical points of view.
Yeah.
Because the whole point in balancing opposites is to get a middle understanding. And but when two people are fighting, it just it pushes the rhetoric up to almost hatred. And I've seen that. I mean, one of the sad things that I saw during the pandemic was that people in their own family started really getting upset at each other.
Yeah.
And a lot of people were just making decisions what they were doing just because of their job. I mean, you know, because I know people who took the medication against their will and they got hurt, and that's really sad. And that's happened in my personal life. So I'm very concerned about what people did do and what people forced people to do.
Yeah.
But
I think the thing about being health practitioners, when you do end up spending an hour or two with people when they're coming in to see you, you end up having a lot of time to chat to individuals, unlike a doctor who spends 5 minutes, 5 to 8 minutes.
That's
a totally different thing. So when you actually do start getting into all sorts of things, you find lots of...
Well, the problem with that type of method in counselling is that when you're counselling people, you actually want them to harness their own values. You don't want to tell them what to do. And when they've got a mandate, it's got nothing to do with their values, unless their values are completely fitting into the public... What was
the medical Tyson complex?
No, he was calling it the public health recommendations.
Yeah, public health. Yeah, there's a word he used.
Yeah, and whatever that is, it's like
agreement we hope that or that's, something.
Right, but it comes a time when if that trust is broken down between people and the public health. And then you find out later on that some of the things they're saying weren't, you know, you've got a difficult position as a counsellor in this because some people by their, because this has to do with the accrediting boards too, some accrediting boards and some professionals are being told what they have to say about it. And that is different to, so if I'm counselling somebody, If they're feeling something about something, I have to validate their feeling usually.
Yeah.
They might have some cognitive thing, except if the people around you are sick from the so-called safe treatment, I can't say, oh, you just should put up with that because we're all doing it, which is what DeGrasse Tyson was saying, oh, you should just put up with that.
Yeah,
that was
he
really
said,
what
he
was
I
saying.
Just found it. He said, you signed a public health contract.
Yeah, I know. And that, I mean,
which
if you
is
want
phenomenal.
To go in,
I could no, sign no, it. I didn't sign it.
That was an incredible thing. I forgot about that. Nobody signed anything. And there is there's an assumed social contract, except it's not, we don't have to look too far back in history where, like when Jung was talking about depotentialized people with totalitarian states, they emerge by themselves and they all have the same parameters when they happen. And because I remember when I was studying art, we made a film about, because there was the whole terrorism thing. It was a new reason for looking into everybody's lives. And it was at the beginning of the internet. So it was like, oh, we can record everybody, everything's doing on the internet. Whereas before it was free. And so the people who remember when it was free, there's some sort of depression that comes from that. Like the people who remember before 2020 and what that was like, they can't do that anymore.
Yeah.
Like there's a whole bunch of things that can't be done anymore. And so there's a type of anxiety, type of depression that goes with that. And so the poor young people, what are they going to think? Like what sort of world, you know, so the teenagers again, the adolescents.
Oh, and I think about, you know,
they're the ones who are going to pay for all this.
Little human beings who are just going to go into a totalitarian future.
Well, not even that. It's like the amount of debt that's been created for them, which is so the young people, there's not as many young people as there were in the previous generations. So this, I think it's the baby boomers are still in charge, aren't they? So they've just docked up using the last 3 years as this way to just create billions of dollars of debt. Like when you look at the debt amounts increasing, it's really quite, and you look at the poor young people who are going to be taxed at 90 cents in the dollar to make it work. Because when the baby boomers retire all over the world, there's a lot of them, and they're just going retiring now. They're starting to retire, and they're a really big group of people all over the world. So, and then there's this smaller group who have to pay for the debts that they just all made by their management. And, I mean, that's just dollars and cents stuff. That's not even being whingy or anything. That's
no,
just what
but
happened.
It's going to really impact. You know, we know that mental health is affected by money. Potentially
the mental,
than anything else. Like it's
the
one
effect
of the
of,
things.
Right. It's one of the things because people are so, I mean, everybody's been so external coming into 2020 and that was already a problem. People aren't doing internal work and so having that external status model they were using, because it's a status model, that's mainly, if you talk to people, they want the new thing, they want this, they want their kids to feel like they come from a rich family and it's so they can get a nice Perth girlfriend, a boyfriend. It's all about this status thing.
Yeah.
And whatever's happened with this huge amounts of payments that they've just taken for the last 3 years, it's like, well, who's going to have any status anyway? Which is good for a personal development system where you can transition into more of a holistic life without worrying about that so much. Because who knows what? I mean, the kids are on the internet all the time. You know, that's deep pension. And they're not experiencing as many roles as they could, which is the only real problem with it, is that it's just role-denying.
And I did notice that on those roles over there, can I just sort of go back there for a sec? You can see that? Yep. So on the roles, what isn't there is things like, you know, like these are all very one-on-one, close, you know, it's not like travel to 27 countries. It's not like, you know, have a big car. It's not like, you know, it's not those big external
This is one person. Someone who's a traveler would be putting traveler in the social role.
But you know what I mean? Like this is someone that whatever happens worldwide, this can still happen within someone's life. And
that's
because there's
right.
big rules going on worldwide with all sorts of shenanigans, then who knows, we might need to be quite insular if some rules end up getting passed over the next few years. So it's nice to have a whole bunch of roles that allow us to be happy now, here, with me, with you, you know, so things that we can actually do that don't require big external stuff.
Well, I've got no problem with the external stuff. So this is an antidote to a lot of things. It's an antidote to polarization. It's an antidote to, you know, because when people just work all the time and don't do anything else, they end up with
they just watch TV.
You know,
they don't think. They drink too much,
and
they smoke too much, they watch too much TV, they don't think about, you know, like hobbies and things, you know.
Right.
It just, you're so buggered by the end of the day, paying your bills, you don't have energy to do anything else. And this reminds us that we are more than just a 2D human.
They're also possibly a list of, that's right, isn't it? Yeah, it's a holistic way of seeing things. But they're also, all of these things, because you've elected themselves, the other thing about all of this, is it's all chosen by the client. A lot of personality and identity systems, when you see them laid out, they're prescribed. Like, for example, I was reading one and it talked about identity, and the only thing it said identity was all about gender and sexuality. But identity is the whole person. And, you know, then, you know, there's different types of things like this that goal setters use and this and that. But this one has no leading questions, really. because it's just an empty space that you put your own thing in, and they're all individual choices. So the client decides the roles, the client decides the numbers. So
Edge, when I did it a couple of years ago, like I remember there was a lot of politics going on at the time, and I wanted to be more engaged in politics. You know, my mum said, well, there's no point just bitching about it, get involved. So I got involved, you know. And
how are your numbers now?
Oh, I haven't looked for ages. Yeah. But very interesting. And I am just keen to keep sharing information, love and light on the planet. You know, that's my aim.
Mm-hmm. Nice. Well, that looks like we're all developing beautifully.
Yeah. Actually, it would be curious because I do think that at the time I was talking about doing a podcast and I was nowhere near it. It was still a glint in my eye, and now I've done like 73 or 74 or something.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah.